Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stack Trace, the podcast that is all about life and technology from two developers' perspectives. And those two developers are me, John Sandell, and my good friend, Mr. Guy Rambo. How's it going over there, Mr. Rambo?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. So this is an interesting time of the year. We are all getting ready, those of us who work on iOS apps and projects that ship on Apple's platforms, getting ready for the new releases, updating apps and so on. Like we've talked about earlier in the cycle here, in the beta cycle, we've been busy kind of adopting new APIs, making sure there are no regressions and so on and so forth. And now, of course, we have an Apple event coming up as well. So yeah, a lot of things going on right now.
An Apple event means we have to play our game, right?
Of course we do. We have to play our poker game where we place our bets around what we think Apple might announce. And we're going to do a slightly shorter game, this one, for reasons that we will talk about later, which is essentially that we don't feel like there are that many things to kind of speculate about when it comes to this event. And that could be for one of two reasons, I guess. One, it could be that there are not that many things being announced at this event, or maybe not many things worth kind of speculating and talking about. And the second is, of course, maybe that there hasn't been that many leaks, and maybe we will see a lot of things that none of us expected.
Yeah, I think there's probably a combination of all of that. And also, I think both, I mean, you have never been like super into following all the rumors and stuff like that. I was usually a little bit more into that stuff and following that more closely, but even I this year, I just haven't had the time to read like the 9 to 5 Mac and Mac rumors articles about stuff that's coming. And the few things I saw here and there, it was all about like colors and cables. So it's like, well, if that's all that's going to be new this year, it's not going to be very exciting. So I guess because of all of that, we kind of struggled to come up with a list of picks for this episode, because we usually have like 2 pages of a notes document in a medium-sized window worth of picks. And this time we have like less than a full page, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we still have like 20 picks or something like that. So it's not like we've come up completely empty-handed. But still, like, we want the game to feel really exciting, right? And we want it to feel not that we're kind of picking at the bottom of the barrel, but actually that we are picking bets that we think will happen, or that we feel strongly won't happen, and that we will actually be able to play some good bets on that and keep things interesting, right? So we don't want to pick things that are completely obvious, or things that, you know, there have been so many rumors about them, we all kind of feel like it's coming, and you know, we want to kind of keep the game interesting. So we've chosen to do a slightly shorter version of the poker game for this episode. So we will do 3 rounds instead of our normal 5 rounds. It will still be really fun, I hope. And then afterwards, we have some more discussions coming up as well. So I think it's going to be a good episode.
Yeah, I guess it's also harder to win, right? You have less of a chance to make mistakes. Yeah,
exactly. The margin for error is very narrow. So you're going to have to keep your focus on, keep your poker face on, Mr. Rambo. Even though I can't see you because we're only talking over audio. But anyway, I hope you have your sunglasses on and, you know, that kind of cap that people are wearing in movies when they're playing poker, you know. Hope you have your poker outfit on for our audio-only recording.
I have my regular glasses on. Does that count?
Same, so let's say it counts. But before we get into the game, let's actually go through the rules real quick for those of you who are listening to this kind of episode for the first time. So normally, before there's an Apple event, we play what we like to call keynote poker, where we place bets on what we think Apple might announce during the keynote event. And we're specifically betting on things that are shown or demoed in the event itself. So not things that are happening at the same time, as part of press releases, or that we learn later as part of the information on Apple's website and so on and so forth. Like, it should all be in the event. And we're going to play 3 rounds, like we just mentioned, where each round we are placing a bet of -5 to +5 points on any of the items that we've agreed upon beforehand. And plus points means that we think the thing will happen, and minus points means that we think the thing won't happen. So we can kind of bet either way there. And then, of course, the other person can place their bet as well. And then at the end, we will see who has gotten the most points. And if you are correct about a pick, you will gain those points. And if you are incorrect, you will lose the same amount of points. I think that pretty much sums up all the rules, except that we will not do the all-in round that we usually do, which is the last round. We usually say that you have to go all-in and place plus 5 points. We won't do that this time because we only are doing 3 rounds. But does that kind of sum things up, Mr. Rambo, or did I miss something there?
I think that sums it up. And also, I would like to once again mention that the lack of more rounds and all-in round could very well be our fault for not following all the rumors this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, we shouldn't say that, oh, this event will be super boring and nothing will happen because we haven't seen the event yet. So we don't know, right? It could just, again, be that for some reason, there were no leaks this time, and we will see so many amazing things, things that we didn't even think about. But yeah, we will just bet on what we've heard, right? Like, that's the kind of the only thing we can do.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't you go ahead and start, Rambo?
Ooh, I like that I get to start, because there is a pick in the list that I think is very likely to happen. And that is that at least one model of iPhone will have a USB-C port instead of a Lightning port.
It's funny that I just said, you know, we don't like to bet on obvious things, things that have been so much rumored and everyone kind of feels will happen, and then you pick this one as the first one.
Well, it's not required until late next year, I think. I'm not, like, super familiar with all of the regulations, but I think they could push it to next year if they wanted to, but it makes sense that they would do it this year, even as like a way to do it and say nice things about it. And, oh, look what we've done. We've added USB-C to the iPhone. How nice are we for doing this? And it's actually because you've been forced to do it, basically, or you will be if you don't. So I think it's their chance to do it in their own terms as much as possible, and almost like a petty move by Apple in this case. Of course, that's a 5.
All right. I will also bet a 5 on this. I feel like it's something that's been heavily rumored. And like you mentioned, there are regulations around the world, specifically here in the EU, that kind of mandate that Apple needs to do this, right? As far as I've understood. And mm-hmm. I think you are right that this doesn't take effect until next year at some point. But I'm not 100% sure of exactly how the regulation is written. But I think there was something to the effect that, you know, they can no longer sell these devices, or they can't introduce new devices and then sell them that don't have USB-C. So it also might be something where it would be cutting it a little bit too close to wait until next year. So doing it this year, if Apple wants to keep with their September, October release window of new iPhones, it kind of makes the most sense to do it this year.
Yeah, and all discussion and politics aside, but personally, I am excited about this. If nothing else happens, but they just move stuff over to USB-C, I will be happy. I do have my disagreements on like legislating about USB ports and stuff like that, but I am happy that this is going to happen regardless of the reasons behind it, because so much stuff uses USB-C these days, and it's just Apple basically that's not using it. And back when Apple changed from the old iPod connector to Lightning, it made sense that they chose Lightning, because like micro USB-C was never that good, and other USB-C standards wouldn't really work for them. But nowadays, there's no advantage to Lightning over USB-C other than the advantage that Apple gets to get royalties for Lightning cables and accessories. So I think it's gonna be the best for everyone, maybe except for Apple, but I don't really care. I just want everything to be USB-C. I'm even excited about the potential for AirPods cases with USB-C and things like that. So yeah, overall, like personally, I'm really happy about this.
Yeah, me too. I feel like iPhone going to USB-C is kind of the big step needed to reach the USB-C utopia that we've all been dreaming about. Because, you know, since the MacBooks really went to USB-C many, many years ago now, you know, in the beginning, there were lots of dongles involved. There are still sometimes dongles involved. But we're kind of slowly but surely getting to this world where most of the technology industry has adopted USB-C across both, like, things like Android devices, you know, PCs, Macs, jacks, gaming systems, and so on. Like, USB-C is now pretty much everywhere, and that's really great for, you know, you can bring one charger to use with all your devices, which I'm really looking forward to. I can already kind of do it, except for my iPhone, so the iPhone also going to USB-C is going to be great in that regard. But back then, when the Mac went to USB-C, like, there was still so many other devices that didn't use that standard, and things were very different. But now I feel like if Apple indeed goes to USB-C, then that will kind of be the last big remaining platform to adopt that standard. And then hopefully we'll see all the kind of smaller platforms or things that haven't yet adopted it actually move there. Because the iPhone is such a big, popular, trend-setting product that if that happens, I hope that that will be kind of the last final step required to really have final USB-C adoption. And then, of course, they can start working on USB-D, where we have to go through the whole cycle one more time. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I don't look forward to USB-D, definitely. It's interesting. What is going to be interesting, I think, is what the overall, like, mainstream reaction is going to be like for this move, because there are always these things that happen that they kind of become memes, and it's just like a thing that the, like, is it the zeitgeist believes on, like, Apple keeps changing their cables, oh, they're so terrible, and they've done it once, but everyone was so upset back then when they did that, that it kind of became this thing, like this meme, and if you want to make fun of Apple, you talk about how they keep changing their cables, and it's actually just a thing they did once. I mean, I guess, like, back in the 80s and 90s, maybe they changed some cable, I don't know, but the big one was moving from the iPod connector to Lightning. But I think things are very different right now, but it's just so easy to make fun of Apple for changing cable standards that I think a lot of publications and influencers and whatnot are going to go that route and just, oh, here's Apple changing the cables again, haha.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as someone who is kind of in tune with technology, we know that what they're doing now, presumably going to USB-C, is very, very different from what they did when they moved to Lightning, where before they moved from one proprietary standard to another. Here they're moving from a proprietary one to an open standard, which is arguably a lot better.
Right.
And at the same time, you probably have a lot of USB-C cables and docks and whatever around the house and out in society and so on, it will be a better move than when they went to Lightning, where it would literally was like, this was a brand new connector that the world has never seen before, and now everyone has to kind of change out everything, all the chargers, all the docks, all the ports, everything needs to be changed. But at the same time, I don't know about you, Rambo, but my own kind of anecdata here tells me that generally people who are not, like, super into technology and into cables and so on, they don't necessarily really know what USB-C is.
Right.
And I've noticed that a lot of friends and family and so on, they don't view USB-C as this cable that you can use for everything. They just still view it as like, oh, this is the cable I use for this specific device, even if it's actually a USB-C cable, so you could use it for multiple devices. And I've just found that really interesting that, you know, we've been living in this world for so long where, apart from regular USB, which I think a lot of people know, you know, their USB-A, I think a lot of people recognize that one. But apart from that, like, so many connectors have been proprietary for so long, not just in the Apple world, but in general, that people have kind of, you know, gotten used to, this is the charger I use for this device, and it's not compatible with anything else. And it's going to probably take some readjusting to, once we get to that USB-C utopia, that you can actually use these cables for more or less any device. And I'm just going to be interesting to see if people are going to react to it like, oh, this is the USB-C cable, I can use the cables I already have. Or that it's going to be, oh, Apple is changing the cable once more. You know, I'm mad about that. So that's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll see both. Also, something else that changed since the last move was that these days people plug their phones into things way less often, and it's only for charging most of the time. Like, I guess there is someone out there, but I don't see a lot of people plugging their iPhone into their Mac to sync with iTunes or stuff like that. Or right. Like a music dock, like an audio player where you plug your iPhone and it plays from speakers. that sort of thing, like iPods, hi-fi kind of stuff, that doesn't really exist anymore. And if it does, it's a very niche thing. I think in order to explain to like regular folks what this is all about, it's better to just say iPhones use the same cable as Android phones now. And that's it. Like, that's an easier way to explain it. They don't need to know that it's USB-C. I think the regular USB people think of when you say USB is USB-A, because it's the one they know that they can never plug the right way around the first time. They have to, for some reason, there are two sides, but you have to try three times until you manage to plug it in.
And you say they, but that includes me as well.
Everyone.
And everyone, right? Like, you never get it on the first attempt. There's something about that cable where it's like every time, even though you know which side is which and you've used this cable 1,000 times, you still plug it in the wrong way.
It's a quantum cable. You can plug it wrong right. Two ways.
That's right. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see. I think, you know, we both bet five on it, so it feels like something that definitely is going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see how it's going to affect the Apple ecosystem, you know, how convenient it is to travel with it, if you indeed are going to feel like you can only bring one charger, or maybe now, since all devices use USB-C, you have to bring two USB-C chargers anyway to charge two devices at the same time. We'll see. But regardless, you know, I also agree that it's a move that I'm looking forward to.
Well, just wait until you see people figure out that USB-C, even though like all USB-C plugs fit into all USB-C holes, it doesn't mean it'll work.
Yeah, hopefully with the iPhone, though, like with charging with such a low wattage, it should be fine, right? Like The problem with USB-C usually is when you get to higher bandwidth, higher throughput of power, that's when things get really tricky. And had such huge problems with that when I was going to buy a USB-C / Thunderbolt 4 cable for my new display that I bought a while ago, where I really wanted 4K over like a 144 hertz, and finding like the right USB-C cable that doesn't cost like as much as the display to actually make that happen was kind of tricky. But thankfully I did pick the right cable, but that was really hard. Like, that was the point where I was like, how could anyone who doesn't spend like hours researching cables actually figure this out? Because it was not easy.
Yeah, definitely. So what's your first pick?
So I'm going to go with a slightly more risky pick. At least that's what I think. Again, not being super in tune with the rumors right now, but I haven't heard much about this, but I'm going to bet that all of the new iPhones that are going to be introduced are going to have the dynamic island.
Mm.
And this kind of follows the pattern that Apple has sometimes following, sometimes not, where the Pro features kind of trickle down to the non-Pro phones. And if we presume that there's going to be a 15, 15 Plus, 15 Pro, and 15 Pro Max or Ultra, then, of course, the Pros will more or less guaranteed have the dynamic island, because I don't think we're moving to a, you know, completely all screen design at the moment yet, even though that would be super cool. And I feel like the dynamic island would be a good feature to move to the non-Pro models, because it would also enable better live activities and these sorts of things. Like, there's a lot of features that have been built around the dynamic island that are not just, you know, it's not just, oh, it's a nicer shape for the cutout for the sensors.
Right.
So that's something that I feel is quite likely, but still not like, you know, something I feel like is guaranteed. I'm still going to give it a 4, because I do want to actually bet a little bit more aggressively in this game, because we have fewer rounds. So I'm going to give that one a 4.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because it's such a new feature, right? It was from last year, and it's not often that last year's Pro high-end feature trickles down in such a way. However, the dynamic island is unique in a sense where it mostly depends on the form factor and the software. So it's not really, it doesn't really require new hardware asterisk. Like, there are little bits and pieces that need to be changed in the hardware for that to work, but it's not like they have to completely change the display technology in order to have it. One thing that I am curious about is what the dynamic island would look like on an iPhone without ProMotion, because so much about it relies on that super smooth responsiveness and animation. But I guess if you just turn on low power mode on your current iPhone 14 Pro, you can already tell what it's like. And I can say that I don't really really like it when it's not under promotion. But I guess this is one of those things that most people don't really care about, and we're just picky.
Yeah, absolutely. I have one other concern that I just realized after betting this. But before I say that, I actually want you to place your place your bet first.
So just to keep things interesting, I'm going to give this one, even though I think it's quite likely, but I'm going to go with a 3 just because never bet against Apple not giving people what they want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is a benefit here to Apple and to developers as well. If all the iPhones move to this design, then it's more kind of uniform and easier to develop for us whenever you're building any kind of feature where you're rendering in that outside of the safe area, the unsafe area, I guess, which I was recently doing, by the way. So that I would be happy if all the phones will adopt like a similar shape in that area. And also for Apple, like developing the OS and the features and marketing and so on, like it's probably easier to say, you know, that, you know, all the new iPhones have the dynamic island, they have all that live activity support and so on.
Developer adoption.
Exactly. But the one thing I thought about was, what will the dynamic island look like on an LCD display? So not an OLED display. Right. Because the whole thing with the dynamic island is that because it's an OLED display and because it has those true blacks, it kind of helps hiding the sensors there and everything and make it actually look like a deliberate area instead of a necessity for housing sensors. So in saying that I think that all the iPhones will have the dynamic island, I feel like I'm kind of implicitly also saying that all the iPhones will have an OLED, which I'm not sure will happen, right? So yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, I'm looking at my iPhone right now as it sits here, and I have the always-on display enabled, but without the wallpaper, so the screen is mostly black. And you can kind of see the actual cutouts, even though it is OLED, because it has kind of a different reflectivity. If you look at it from the front, it's way less noticeable, but from an angle, you can definitely tell. So I don't think Apple, that would be like a deal breaker for Apple. And I also wonder if maybe they could make the actual cutouts not be completely black. They could make them be like the LCD off black color, I guess.
Right. And actually, real time follow up here. I was just looking at the iPhone 14 spec sheet here, and at least according to Apple.com, which I feel like is a good place to look, it says that both the iPhone 14 and the iPhone 14 Plus have OLED displays.
Oh, so we're outdated.
There you go.
Yes. How many feedbacks did we get between us saying that and you figuring it out?
Exactly. So it looks like my bet is pretty safe anyway. So, okay, I'm happy now with my bet. I was a bit worried there, but now I feel like I'm happy again. Yeah, so that's good.
I guess the only drawback would be the lack of promotion, but as we've established, people don't really care about that, at least most people.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I got lost in all the, like, which iPhones have LCD versus OLED and so on, just because Apple, like, they keep coming up with these crazy names for it, right? Like, it's the Super Retina XDR display, which is the actual name they're using. It's not me making it up as a funny joke. It's actually what it's called. And then there was a Liquid Retina display, like, which one is OLED, which one is not? I don't know, right? Like, it gets hard to keep track of. But it's good to know then that all the iPhones as of last generation have an OLED display. So thumbs up on that.
Nice. So for my second pick, I'm looking at our list and I'm trying to find the more interesting ones. I don't want to pick a boring one again. I also don't want to pick another USB-C related one or cable related one. So let's do something a bit fun. And this is not, I don't know. I think you put this in here. So let's see how it goes. So I'm going to pick that there will be a demo, including the Vision Pro, with at least one detail or feature not seen at WWDC.
All right. Yeah, that's a fun pick. That's a really fun pick.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, the reason I'm not fully invested on this one is because it could definitely go both ways, I think. They could definitely take advantage of this very important event for Apple and the media that covers Apple and use it as yet another platform to show off Vision Pro. But I guess that will depend a lot on what's going on internally with the project. Like, do they feel like they're going to meet their deadline of, I guess it was early 2024? Do they feel like it's going to be a little bit behind? Do they have perhaps like something different to show that they haven't shown at WWDC? What other stuff will there be during the event? If it's going to be a longer event, maybe they can do some Vision Pro stuff. So I can definitely see going both ways. We could definitely have another pick that's like Vision Pro is not mentioned.
Right.
But I think mentioned definitely, demoed with something new about it that hasn't been demoed before, I think that's way less likely. So I'm going to play slightly safer and go with a 3 on this one. 3 is like my midway point. So let's go with 3. I think it's like 50-50. I can definitely see them doing a demo, but I could definitely see there being absolutely no demo whatsoever and maybe just being briefly mentioned or shown in a slide.
Yeah, it really depends on what the kind of overall theme of the event is, right? Mm-hmm. And if they do that thing when they open it and say, today it's all about the iPhone, and we're just going to talk about the iPhone, and here we go. Or if it's more like an event where they're going to talk about a bunch of different things, like, you know, different events have different themes. And this theme had the name Wanderlust, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of interesting as a name, right? Like, does it refer to kind of the satellite features or something in the iPhone? Does it refer to maybe, you know, with the Vision Pro, you can go to different places virtually? Like, I don't know. Like, we shouldn't read too much into those names because they're always like just, you know, just names and the logos and so on. It doesn't always completely map to something being announced, but still, like, it's fun to speculate about, right?
Right.
But what I think, I think there's definitely an argument to be made here that Apple feels that they need to kind of keep the hype train going, so to speak, about the Vision Pro. Because, you know, it was announced pretty far away from when it's actually going to be launched. And in the beginning, it's just being launched in the US. And of course, going to take even longer for us two to get it and so on, like in our regions. And it's getting like released worldwide. So I feel like they kind of need to give us those like regular bits of hype in order for people to like learn more about the device and kind of being interested in it, because otherwise the risk is that they, you know, announced it at WWDC this year and then by the time it ships, people have kind of forgotten about it, right?
Right.
And this is something that actually happens quite a lot in the video game industry. So in the video game industry, which, you know, listeners who have listened to the show for a while probably know that I am very much, very much into, games are usually revealed like years before they actually ship. And then the challenge is, you know, to keep the same thing, really, like to keep the hype train going and to show new trailers and new content to keep people excited about the game so that when it actually does come out, it's not like something people forgot about, but they're still actually excited about it. And I feel like the Vision Pro here faces a similar dilemma because it was announced so early because of probably, you know, reasons that they wanted developers to get started with it and, you know, they need to go through regulatory processes and so on. So it makes sense. But I think that is a reason why we might see new features, really, and kind of new things coming out that we haven't learned about the device yet. Because at the stage they showed it, especially when people talked about their kind of hands-on demos and how guided it was and how they were not allowed to do certain things and certain things weren't working, it feels like that stage that they revealed it in, it was very, very early, like also in the development process, and a lot of things weren't properly implemented. So it's also very likely that things have now been implemented and they can actually show them off properly. So I think this is also pretty likely.
Yeah, probably because there were whole teams of people at Apple who are needed for the software, but they weren't disclosed on Vision Pro, so they can work on it, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I think that's also super likely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and give this a 4, actually.
Mm.
I think this is pretty likely, and I hope that we will see it, because I think it would, like I mentioned, be good to kind of give us more information to get people excited about this device, because I've said this before, and I will say it again, that I am not yet really excited about the Vision Pro. I'm excited about it from a technological perspective and the accomplishments and, you know, how much of cool technology they've managed to fit into this device. But as a user, like someone who is thinking about if this is a device I want to purchase, it doesn't really excite me that much yet. But hopefully that will change if they will show more features and show more use cases and, you know, kind of tell a broader story of how this device can be used. So yeah, let's hope that happens.
Definitely.
So for my second pick, I'm going to go back to the world of the iPhone, not to the world of USB-C, not yet. We will definitely get back there, I think, but let's do another iPhone-related pick. So I'm going to bet that the iPhone is going to take inspiration from the Apple Watch Ultra and actually introduce a programmable button, an action button, instead of the ring and silent toggle. So on the Apple Watch Ultra, there is a button. Rambo, do you remember what this button is called? Is it the action button?
Yep, it's the action button.
The action button. Oh, that's a good name. That's what I always call those kinds of button in code. Like if there's like a login screen and there's a button, I always call that like, that's the action button, right?
Right.
The action button style. So good that they also use the same naming convention for their hardware. That's very, very important to me. So this button, I think, I don't have an Apple Watch Ultra, but it looks really cool. And it looks like a really useful hardware feature to have a button that is programmable, that users can decide what it does. And for the iPhone, I think that could be incredibly interesting, especially combined with the power of shortcuts and these sorts of things. Like imagine you could run any kind of shortcut you want with a press of a hardware button. That could be great for things like setting your alarm, for example, right? Like you could just like at the end of the day, press this button and your iPhone alarm turns on and you put it away on your charger and there you go. Of course, it would not be great if you accidentally press that button on a day where you don't have to wake up early in the morning. But anyway, I think that would be super cool to have, maybe with some built-in features by default. Maybe, you know, one of the options is to still use the ring silent toggle. But I feel like especially now that we have focus modes and do not disturb, I personally very rarely use the ring silent toggle. I mostly just use the do not disturb mode when I don't want my phone to make any sounds. And I feel like, you know, probably a lot of users do the same thing. So replacing that with a more versatile button that can do a bunch of different built-in things and perhaps also user programmable things, that'd be fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But before I comment any further, how many points?
Nice. All right, so let's do 3 on this one.
Cool. 5.
All right, Rambo, do you know something I don't?
Not really, but I just think it's really likely. Well, perhaps I do know one thing, and it's from a report on 9to5 Mac from Felipe, where, so you know when you toggle the ring silent switch, when you put it into silent mode, there's a haptic feedback. I don't know since which iPhone model that's the case, but there is like a almost like the haptic version of the AirPods low battery sound. It's very similar in feeling. And recently in one of the iOS 17 betas, they introduced a haptic for when you turn silent mode off as well. But when you use the ring silent switch on iPhones, it only does the haptic when you turn silent mode on. So what's the other haptic for, I wonder? Almost like they want people to be able to still like toggle that when the phone is in their pocket and still be able to realize what they're doing because the haptic feedback is going to be very different. So that's just like one little thing that I saw that made me raise my eyebrow a little bit and think that this is more likely than I initially thought. But I was already expecting this to be the case. I think it's a low-hanging fruit, really, because at some point I remember wondering whether phones were like required by law to have a silent switch, like a physical silent switch, because Apple would just not change that. And like ever since the first iPhone, every single iPhone has had a mute switch and like a physical one that actually toggles a physical contact. And it's just, I don't know, it's just weird because it's such an old school type of tech to have on such a modern device. I don't know what the Android world looks like, in that area. I do have a show me thing here but I don't remember if it has a physical switch. But yeah, it just makes sense to have a programmable button. And the thing I'm looking forward to the most being able to do with that button is run shortcuts, which is something you can do on Apple Watch Ultra. So I guess you will be able to do the same on iPhone. And there are just so many possibilities.
Yeah, it really is. And it would be really cool if the button could even do different things depending on if you click it, double click it, hold it, and so on.
Right.
So you could, for example, still do a mute silent switch mode by single clicking, and then, for example, run a shortcut when you long press or when you double click and so on. That would be super useful because there is a utility factor of having a hardware switch for Ring Silent Mode specifically, which is that you can do it while it's in your pocket. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you sit down at the cinema and you realize, oh, I didn't turn on Do Not Disturb, the movie's just starting, I don't want to take out my phone and be that person, so I'm just going to flip it on, flip the sound off, I guess, in my pocket. So that is one kind of use case or utility factor that you would lose if you would make it into something that is only kind of software based. But then again, if you can do it still with the button, then that would be great. But then you kind of lose that programmable aspect. So that's why I'm hoping that we get the best of both worlds, that you still can do Ring Silent Switch with one mode, but then run a shortcut or do something custom with another mode. So let's hope it's as versatile as something like the mouse.
Yeah, something they haven't done yet that I don't know why. And of course, this wouldn't be the only way. Like I mentioned, it's important to have easy access to that feature for situations like a movie theater and things like that. In my case, and I think in a lot of people's use cases, I just flip it to mute and leave it there for the entire lifetime of that device with me, because I really never want my iPhone to make any noise whatsoever unless I'm watching a video or something. But that's another category of sound, so it doesn't really make a difference if you have it on ring or mute. But one thing they should definitely do is when you enable theater mode on Apple Watch, it should mute your iPhone. And I guess the reason why you can't do that now, I mean, it could technically, but it would be weird because then the software state wouldn't match the physical button state. And it's not like there's a servo motor on the Ring switch where you could enable theater mode on your watch and your iPhone will go click and turn off the Ring sound. So I think if they go that route with the action button and you can use as one of its functions the Ring Silent, they could also do integrations like that with the Apple Watch. Because if I'm turning on theater mode on my Apple Watch, it's presumed that I don't want my iPhone to make any sound because I'm in an environment where the screen of my Apple Watch turning on will bother people. So imagine if my phone makes a sound. So yeah, I guess there's a lot of things that detaching this feature from a physical switch unlocks.
Yeah, absolutely. Having physical switches is really practical, but the fact, like you mentioned, that they can get out of sync when something is also software controlled is a huge downside, right? So having a button that is still physical and you can still press it, but it doesn't have a explicit on and off state in hardware, I think that would be super cool.
I already have a feature request for this feature that we don't even know if it will happen, but it would be kind of cool if not only would it have a single click, double click, maybe even triple click, click and hold, but what if it had pressure or at least two stages, kind of like a traditional camera shutter button, and they could even use that maybe for the camera for something. So I can see a lot of potential in having more than just pressed and not pressed and have other states. But also, I do understand that it's a bit tricky. And at least with the Apple Watch Ultra, you do have to hold the button for a while for it to perform its action. And I guess it would be kind of the same for the iPhone because it's very hard to debounce that sort of thing. You don't really know if the phone is... the software technically knows, but it's not perfect. But what if I have a shortcut that turns on my oven or something and I accidentally press my action button when I'm traveling and then my oven at home turns on. Imagine if HomeKit actually worked that well. But yeah, it's tricky. It's something that there's a lot of work that has to be done so that it doesn't get triggered accidentally.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it could even have something similar to like the PlayStation 5 controller, where it has like mm-hmm. the adaptive resistance in the triggers.
That's
like maybe
cool.
It could have something like that, like where you could, depending on the situation, have like, you know, if you're opening the camera app, then it's super easy to tap it and you can just take a photo very quickly with that action button. But when it's in your pocket and the phone is locked, then it's actually kind of, you have to really press it to trigger the action. Like something like that could be cool as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So for my last pick, so this is the last round and we're not doing all in, so I can pick whatever I want. I don't have to pick something that I think is super likely to be announced. I'm going to pick something a bit different, and that is related to the Apple Watch. But it is kind of a boring pick, I must admit, because it's not looking forward for something to happen, but for something to not happen. I kind of wish that I'm wrong, but unfortunately, I don't think I am. But I'm going to pick that whatever the new Apple Watch series, whatever that they announce, will not have any new health-related sensors. So the new Apple Watch Series 9 or whatever will not have new health sensors.
All right. That's interesting because it feels like there's always speculation around what's the next health sensor going to be. Is it going to measure blood sugar? Is it going to measure, you know, the ambient temperature or something like that? Like, is it going to be able to tell when you have a fever? Like, it feels like there are still a lot of things Apple could do with the Apple Watch, especially since they're positioning it more and more as an actual health product rather than just the watch. So what's your reasoning here? Again, do you know something I don't?
Not really. I just feel like there hasn't been anything in terms of rumors or leaks about new sensors for this year's Apple Watch. And I'm mentioning specifically health-related sensors. Like, I don't know, maybe they could add like a new outside ambient pressure sensor or whatever, but I'm specifically talking about stuff that's related to health. And I just feel like this year for Apple Watch, they're probably going to be doing more like cosmetic changes and also probably a processor upgrade, because if I'm remembering correctly, the Apple Watch has been using pretty much the same SoC, just with a different name, basically, ever since the Series 5 or 6, around that time. So there hasn't been really a SoC processor CPU upgrade to the Apple Watch for quite a while, and I feel like this would be the year for them to do that. And if they can figure out things they can do with that additional power that doesn't require new health sensors, I think they could have a very interesting product without the need for new sensors, just with like cosmetic changes and better processors, which maybe enable software features and probably also better battery life as well.
Yeah, exactly. Better battery life, and it's like 50% faster or 20% faster or whatever. Like that's always a good selling point, right?
Yeah. And to be clear, like, I'm not criticizing Apple for not updating the processor on the Apple Watch for the past few years, because honestly, I don't think it needed that. It's fine. Like, I don't think my Apple Watch is slow. Of course, better processors give you more headroom for battery life and also additional features and more leniency towards maybe third-party apps being able to do stuff in the background and things like that, which we always like to get. But the Apple Watch has been just fine with whatever it's currently gotten. So I don't feel like this has been like a big issue, but I think it's time. And since they've been holding on to the current generation for a while, it's probably going to be a significant jump, at least in one aspect, either power or either more speed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be great. Like, it's interesting because the way the Apple Watch has evolved kind of in terms of how people use it, kind of like it's more like a device that it's there, it provides you with information when you need it, but you don't really interact with it that much, right?
Right.
Like, it does the sensor thing, it does workout tracking and so on, sleep tracking, so it does processing in the background and so on, but it's not really something where you need like a lot of GPU power, for example, to drive like the display and render sophisticated graphics, because that's not really how Apple Watch apps have evolved to become. Like, they are more kind of complication based, or, you know, they run in the background or and things like that. And I feel like that's, yeah, it's just what you said. Like, it's that kind of use cases don't really require that same kind of steady incremental performance gains that you need on something like a Mac, for example, where, you know, a new Mac being introduced, like, imagine if the M3 is shipping and it doesn't actually improve performance, that would be very disappointing, right? So yeah, it's interesting. And I guess also what you're saying here is there could still be health-related software features that we haven't heard of,
right?
And they could still be non-health-related sensors, like you also mentioned. So you're specifically saying no new hardware health-related sensors.
Yeah, but if they have like a new pressure sensor for ambient air pressure, but they have a health spin on that, then I guess I lose, because it doesn't have to be like a blood pressure monitor or a glucose sensor. If there's a new sensor and it has anything to do with health at all and it's mentioned in the keynote, then that's not what I'm talking about. So I would lose the points, which, by the way, I forgot to give the points. I'm going to be a little bit more risky and go with a 4 on this one.
All right. I'm going to give this one -1. So I again feel like there's definitely, like, even though there haven't been any leaks or anything regarding it, I feel like every Apple Watch feels like it needs something to kind of have that health angle, because it's such a prominent way they market the product. And I don't know. I don't remember exactly what new features have been introduced in which new particular Apple Watch every year, but it feels like there's that steady supply of new health-related sensors, or sensors like you just mentioned here now that can be used for health. And I feel like that last caveat there is really what kind of pushed me from +2 to -1. Because, for example, if there is something like a temperature sensor, I'm sure they're going to talk about it from a health perspective.
By the way, the Apple Watch already has a temperature sensor. It's worth mentioning just to avoid feedback.
Right. Of course. Still, it's an example, right? But it doesn't do things like alert you if you have a fever, right?
No, it doesn't. Yeah. So basically, it's mostly for people who have a uterus and have that cycle each month. And also, when you sleep with your Apple Watch, it does take your temperature while you sleep, regardless. Right. So like, I use Pillow, a former sponsor, and it does tell you like what your average temperature was during sleep, and a little bit of like the variation. And I have noticed that, I don't know if it's just like a coincidence, but it looks like my temperature is usually lower the nights I slept better for some reason. I don't know what the correlation is, but it's an interesting data point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in general, the more sensors, the better, right? Like, right. The more sensors you can have, the more holistic view of the environment and, you know, the person that the watch is tracking, it gets, right? So I'm again hoping for this to be something here, because it feels like there's been a lot of talk about different sensors, and I'm hoping that any of them can come into this year's edition. It's kind of funny though, because I was betting -1 on a bet that was negative to begin with. So I'm kind of doing a double negative here. I'm betting that it's not going to happen, that is not going to happen. So that's going to be fun to parse.
Yeah.
All right, so for my final pick of this game, I'm actually going to do a little bit more boring one here and go back to the USB-C world here. And I'm going to bet, this is your favorite pick here, Rambo, you love this kind of stuff, it's that the USB-C cables that ship with the new iPhones will be color matched.
Ooh.
Because the reason you like this so much, Rambo, is because I know that your two favorite things are color-matched cable rumors and rumors regarding cables. So here you have two in one.
Well, I am not a fan of the rumors. I don't hate the rumors themselves. I am, in fact, a fan of color-matched cables. Like, if they actually do that, I will love it, because I love color-matched cables. I think every Apple product should come with color matched cables, and they have been doing a lot of that with the Mac, especially like the M1 iMac. Everything is color matched, and I really, really like that. So I will be happy if this happens, and I think it's fairly likely. I do wonder if this would be in the keynote, because I have a vague memory of past iPhone events and other product events where this sort of thing is stuff we figure out later. And often, like, only when the first, like, customers start receiving the products that they purchased on pre-order and stuff like that, usually from Australia, because they're ahead of everyone. So I am helping you a little bit by mentioning this, but since there will be probably a lot about cables during the keynote, because it is the keynote where most likely we will see the first iPhones with USB-C, maybe they would mention that as like another thing to put in the USB-C basket.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And also, like, it wouldn't be enough if we simply saw like an introduction video of USB-C and the iPhone is yellow and the cable is yellow, because that doesn't give us enough evidence to say that they are color matched, because maybe the space gray iPhone doesn't have a space gray cable. Maybe they're all yellow for all we know.
I'm going to give that to you. Like, I'll say if there is like a promo video and we see more than one iPhone color and each iPhone color has a color matched cable, I think that counts, because our rules are it must be visible in the keynote at some point. So we'll see it. But I think a promo video where it's fair to assume that they are color matched, I think we can give you whatever many points you're going to give this bet.
Yeah, and I feel like, especially if they're going to try to spin USB-C as something they wanted to do all along and it has nothing to do with the EU or any other government, then they're going to spend some amount of time on it and highlight some features. For example, the superior transfer speed or the convenience of having the same connector or the fact that, like, now you can charge your MacBook and your iPhone with the same cable and so on and so forth, then there's going to be cables being shown, right? So right. I feel like that kind of helps me here. If we go by those rules that, you know, as long as we see the cables being color matched in the video, then it counts. And I'm going to give this one a 4.
So to make the game more interesting, I'm going to give this one a -1.
All right, so you're doing the same thing I did on the last round, Ramble. Mm-hmm. This is super fun. This game, I feel like, could go anyway. Like, I have no idea. I have no feeling here of what's going to happen in this game here. It could be that we both end up with minus points, or there could be like a 20-point gap, even though we only had 3 rounds. So this is very, very interesting.
Yeah, and actually, I am not going to be able to watch this event live. And it's the first time that's going to happen for several years, I think. And that's because I'm going to be on my way to Spain for the NS Spain conference. I remember in 2018 when I went there, we actually watched the keynote together in the speaker's house, and it was a lot of fun. But this time, unfortunately, I will be flying when the event is going to be happening. However, I will be flying to São Paulo to catch my flight to Spain. So in between those flights, I will probably be able to download the video and then actually watch it on my flight. So probably gonna disconnect to not get any spoilers in between.
All right, that sounds super cool. And I'm really a little bit jealous, but also happy for you that you're going to NS Spain. I wish I could also make it this year, because it's always such a great conference. I'm going to go to the Pragma conference in October in Italy, which I'm also really looking forward to. Getting back into conferences, both of us here a little bit, which is really, really exciting. So I couldn't make it to both conferences, I'm afraid, but NS Spain is always such an amazing conference, so I'm sure you'll have a great time.
By the way, the video for my talk at SwiftTO is live, and we'll leave a link for that in the show notes.
Yeah, awesome. It's still on my watch list. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really looking forward to watching it soon. So yeah, really exciting times with conferences and new talks and so on.
Don't watch if you're going to NS Spain, by the way, for those who are listening, because it's pretty much the same talk. So no spoilers. There will be some adaptations for NS Spain and some improvements. It's going to be a new and improved 1.2 2 version of the talk. But don't watch it. Don't get any spoilers if you are going to NS Spain.
All right, that's good advice. So I think before we wrap up today's recording here, we can just spend a few minutes talking about like our overall feelings around the event, because we did mention here in the beginning of the episode that we didn't feel like there were too many super interesting things to speculate about when it comes to the iPhone specifically, and we kind of had a hard time imagining what else might be in the event. I mean, we did include some things about the Vision Pro, but it's also kind of hard to imagine what that might be. And then the question, like we also discussed during the episode, is this because there are simply no leaks and there will be so many interesting things in the event? Or is it because this will be an event where, because of the iPhone at this point is such a mature platform and such a mature product, and this is very likely going to be a very iPhone-focused event, that perhaps there aren't that many super interesting things to talk about or speculate about with the iPhone because it's already come so far? So, Rambo, how do you feel around this in general?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's almost every year that there is this sentiment, at least from part of people who follow tech, that, iPhone is boring, Apple is boring, it's always the same thing. There are lots and lots of memes of, like, I bought a new iPhone, it's exactly like the old one. of course, that's an exaggeration, but some years it is very similar to the previous year's model, and the reason they update it every year is mostly because of stock prices, basically. They don't have to update it every year. But again, I think it's nice that every year it gets better and you are not forced to purchase every new iPhone. As John very much knows and follows that non-rule, basically, that if you're happy with your current iPhone and you don't think the new one is going to be very much an improvement for you, then don't get it. Like, if you don't want the iPhone, don't buy it.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it has the big benefit of when you do upgrade, which I do, you know, maybe every 3 or 4 years, something like that, when it comes to my iPhone, it's a huge upgrade. So that is very, very cool.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, like, I think it's incremental improvements every year, and especially if we get USB-C this year, I think that in and of itself is a nice improvement to get. But yeah, I'm not particularly excited about this event because I have a feeling, and this happens often as well with Apple, where it looks like they are a company right now that is very much focused on shipping the Vision Pro hardware mm-hmm. and software. So even though, yeah, it's a big company, they have lots of people, lots of very good people, a lot of that really good people is committed to Vision Pro stuff. And I had some feelings during this year's beta cycle where it feels like that's the case, because what we got as beta 1 and what we have now as beta 8, not a lot has changed other than making it more stable and working towards a shippable version to customers, which is what betas are for, by the way. So it's not like a criticism necessarily. It's just different from previous years where the major beta cycle is usually filled with surprises and new features and changes and controversies, like the Safari tabs thing last year or maybe a couple of years ago. So don't get me wrong, like, I'm not criticizing them necessarily, but I feel like it's probably gonna be a little bit of a less interesting iPhone event because they are so focused on the future that maybe the present is not that important at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, Apple at this point, like, with the iPhone and most of their products, like, they're at such a huge scale and they're such a huge company that they can't really afford to take many risks when it comes to, like, doing crazy new things with the iPhone, because that's not also really what people want. Like, when they go into a store and buy an iPhone, they want an iPhone, right? Like, they don't want to accidentally buy the wrong iPhone and use the experimental version that is full of, you know, quirks, and you have to know these things before you buy it. Like, the iPhone now is such a safe bet. Like, you can buy pretty much any iPhone and be happy with it. Of course, like, those of us who, like, follow these things and are interested in them, like, we, of course, want to get, like, a specific model, like the Pro version or Pro Max and so on. But I feel like in general, you could just recommend any iPhone because, you know, they're so good in general overall. And this is very different from other companies, which might be more on the cutting edge. Like, for example, we've seen Android devices for years now adopt a design with their screen where they have like a much smaller cutout compared to the dynamic island. And they take different trade-offs based on that. They're also like foldable phones. Like there are all sorts of different form factors and new features and new things in the Android world that Apple have not adopted. And it doesn't seem like they will adopt them anytime soon because they have kind of different priorities when it comes to the product development. It doesn't mean that Apple is never innovating or anything like that, but it just makes sense for the product. Like, I don't think the iPhone needs to reinvent itself every year. Absolutely not. I think if we get like incremental upgrades, that's fantastic. Like, that's just great because it means that when you do buy a new iPhone, you get a really good one. And then, you know, every year it gets slightly better and maybe you don't need to buy a new one every single year. And that's also good for our wallets because we don't need to spend that money every year. And, you know, overall the product just gets better over time without kind of drastically changing. But I do also feel the same way as you just mentioned that the focus has very much been on the Vision Pro because that's really where a lot of things have changed during the betas. I also agree with you. Like I remember I installed the first beta of the new version of Xcode immediately when it came out. I opened up all of my freelancing projects. They all built just fine and they seemed to, you know, not have any problems running on the latest version, which is kind of rare, right? Like most of the time you open up the first beta and you have a bunch of warnings and compiler errors and you have to fix them. And then I opened it up like 1 or 2 weeks ago to just check now before, you know, the actual release of the OSs. And it was the same thing, like no warnings, no regressions. And I'm not saying that, oh, that's just because I wrote amazing code or anything like that. I mean, I do try to keep my code future-proof.
What are you doing, Apple? You're supposed to break my code.
Exactly. You're supposed to give me something to do. But it just kind of is a signal that, you know, things have been very stable, which is, again, a really, really good thing. Like, it's great. And the fact that things perhaps haven't changed that much or, you know, there hasn't been that much breakage in compatibility, which is, again, is a good thing, but it's also kind of a sign that there hasn't been that many changes this year compared to other years. So yeah, it's I think it is what it is. And from a kind of just speculation perspective, what might happen, it is quote unquote a little bit more boring, but sometimes boring is really good. And I, for one, welcome this year, especially this year for me. I've had so many other things to do. So I'm happy that, you know, chasing down compatibility issues and figuring out compiler errors in the new version of Xcode was something I could avoid this year, which I thank Apple for.
Yeah, and while everyone, or at least like most Apple-focused developers are looking forward to iOS 17 and the new iPhones and whatnot, I am here with my targets a little bit further ahead in October-ish, probably, for macOS Sonoma, which is when I plan on shipping a big update to everybody. So each developer has their own focus, and mine is mostly and almost completely on the Mac this year. We will have a minor Chibi Studio update for iOS 17 with a little bit of interactivity on widgets and whatnot, but that's mostly it for us on iOS. But yeah, I agree with you, and the scale thing is interesting, and I guess if they are doing like the iPhone Ultra rumor, even if it doesn't come this year, maybe that could be a way where Apple could afford to be a little bit more adventurous and more like prototype-y with their products, which we see a lot of Android vendors doing with really like different form factors and features. I am a bit jealous of some camera features from some high-end Samsung phones where they have like this crazy amount of zoom on the camera, which is really impressive. They do like use AI to fake the moon sometimes, but other stuff, like if you want to like take a picture of an airplane that's flying by and you can like zoom in really far, I think that sort of thing is really cool, and we'll probably see improvements to camera. We didn't pick any camera stuff because, again, that's kind of boring, but it's also something that gets a lot of people to buy the new iPhone every year, where they want the absolute best camera they can have, and it's definitely something they keep on improving. So maybe this year, who knows, or maybe next year, we'll see like a super expensive iPhone Ultra with those more uncertain features, perhaps, is the way to describe them. And also stuff that they are just not able to deliver at the scale that they need for the other, like, lower-end iPhone models, which is kind of funny to say because every iPhone is high-end, and that's why they're so expensive. Like, there is no low-end iPhone, really. Only, like, within the lineup, you can compare them and say that one is lower-end than the other, but they are all high-end at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely think there is much to be said about that scale factor. Like, I don't see the Apple Watch Ultra as experimental or, you know, you use it and it has a ton of bugs because so experimental is like a beta device. I don't think it's that at all. I haven't used it myself, but looking at reviews and hearing what people who have used it say about it, like, it feels like a super polished, very much an Apple product to the same standards all the other Apple Watches. But because it is much lower in volume, they can do different things with it. And also because it's not meant to be sold as the kind of standard Apple Watch because it doesn't have that price point. It doesn't have, you know, it's much larger. It has like a very opinionated kind of design and use cases it's for. It can do kind of more interesting things because of that. When you're building something that is a super mass market thing like the iPhone is, then it also has to be appealing to as many people as possible. And if there would be something like an iPhone Ultra or an iPhone Fold or something like that, like some special iPhone that is meant to do some specific things, that would kind of inherently be more interesting and fun because, well, it's unique, right? So yeah, hopefully we'll see something like that.
I guess if you really want the really different and kind of experimental but not quite version of the iPhone, you should get a Vision Pro next year.
Exactly. That sounds great, Rambo. Let's just do that.
That's your iPhone Ultra right there.
Right, exactly. An iPhone Ultra that's on your face. All right, so with that, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. So thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you again soon once the Apple event has already been broadcasted and we've seen who's going to win this poker game, and we will share the results and more things with you next episode. So until then, say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.